Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio, which is a service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television Radio. This is your host, Jim Masters, here. We welcome you from all around the world, and thank you so much for joining us today. We're always having an opportunity to chat with folks who are really working hard to make our world a better place and give us a unique perspective on life. It's 11 a.m. Eastern here at our broadcast center, and my honor and pleasure to welcome Norman R. Klein, Ph.D., to our broadcast. He's been in private practice in New York City as well as Westport, Connecticut, with board certification in clinical and forensic psychology for more than 30 years. He has taught undergraduates and medical students at leading schools as well, and he's published in textbooks and in peer-reviewed professional journals. He lives with his wife of 50 years and is a very proud father of two adult sons, and they have thriving families as well. His work is extraordinary. You know, with clinical work, life is difficult. We sort of get into trouble when our reality doesn't match our expectations. We believe we should be happy, at peace, safe, unconflicted, successful. This is a common source of much discontentment and distress, and the bigger the gap is between expectation and reality, the more the suffering. A seasoned therapist can actually guide you to learning ways to lead a more satisfying life. As far as the forensic work, too, forensic psychology is where the profession of the behavioral sciences interfaces with the criminal, family, and civil courts. Dr. Klein serves the legal profession when the trier of fact, judge, and or jury needs an expert opinion to serve as evidence regarding a question involving psychology, competence to stand trial, parental fitness, malpractice by another psychologist, things of that nature. Such evidence by opinion is beyond the general lay public scope, of course. It is vital to understand it and to have that expert witness as well in any field to understand. It's not there to win the case for the retaining attorney. The expert witness is there to defend his or her opinion only as persuasively as possible. Fascinating conversation we have in store for you here live on Close Up Radio. Join us as we welcome Norman R. Klein, Ph.D., live and direct from his offices to Close Up Radio for our next 30-minute conversation. Dr. Klein, an honor and a pleasure to have you here as our guest. We welcome you to the show today.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you so much. I must say you stole a lot of my thunder. That was a great introduction and informative.
Why, thank you. I appreciate that. And that's you. You do all of that. Sometimes the guests are surprised. Wait a minute, I do all of that work? Yes, you do, and that's why you're revered in the industry. First, you know, I like to humanize the guests. I like to make them relatable for the audience. For you, what was it about the field of psychology? What was it about this area of expertise that attracted you on your own life's journey, things that have inspired you? Tell us a little bit about that and when you realized it was in your DNA, your calling to do this kind of work, doctor.
Okay, well, I know there's a fairy tale answer to that for most people, but it's much more common, and my reality is much more commonplace in that, you know, you go to school, you go to college, you make a decision. All along the way, one makes decisions that narrow that spectrum of opportunities so that when you, for example, you pick a major in college, now you've eliminated a lot of other things, and your outlook becomes more narrow all the time. So I didn't do well in organic chemistry, so medical school was out. my father was a prominent attorney, so I wasn't going to compete with him and go to law school. I wound up majoring in psychology and finding that I had a great affinity for it, the philosophy involved, the science involved. And so I majored in that, and one thing led to another. I went to graduate school, and you make other decisions, and sooner or later you have a very surgical focus on what you wind up doing, and all of that is tempered by, influenced by, and maybe even changed by the first job you get. And that's what happened to me. Would you like to hear about that?
Yeah. Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Well, okay, so my first job was, after graduate school, I had jobs before that, was in a hospital, Bronx Lebanon Hospital, which was an affiliation with Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and we had the first in New York City clinic, forensic clinic, and this is back in the late 70s, before there was such a field as forensic psychology. It was we had our small share of coalescing the field with the little publications that we did. So we had this contract with the city of New York to do competency evaluations. In other words, in the criminal courts, when the question arose, is this defendant too crazy to stay in trial? And so little by little, I got really involved in that and jazzed by it and the process of it. And it's important to remember, you know, expert witnessing, I mean, so this is the forensic end of it, but there's the clinical end of it also. And to differentiate the two, the clinical is what everybody comes to understand to be, dealing with patients and psychotherapy or psychodiagnosis or counseling, as opposed to the forensic field. And I'll get into that in a little bit because I think it's important. So you wind up specializing in the interface of psychology and the law, but an expert witness, and this is a problem out there, and it's a problem of perception, and it's a PR problem. There are expert witnesses out there who are expert at being experts. And in other words, they're not expert in anything other than that. They're commonly derisively referred to as hired guns. It's way more important and in the service of fair jurisprudence to be an expert at something. So what am I an expert in? I'm an expert in clinical psychology. Half of my practice is clinical. Half of it is forensic. And I think it's interesting at this juncture for me to talk about forensic. You know, people have this misconception from, you know, sensationalized TV and print media about, you know, CSI-like activity related to forensic. Forensic is an adjective. It comes from the Latin forensis, which means over pertaining to the forum. So it's simply a term to denote the interface of whatever you're expert at and courtroom. Civil courts, family courts, criminal courts. And so if you'd like, if anyone has a question about how a psychologist, a behavioral scientist, gets involved in those three spheres, the answer is very concrete and not particularly sexy.
I think it's fantastic. And I have to tell you one quick note before we do that. I went to school in New York at Long Island University, and one of the groups that I was the president of was called the Forensic Society. But the use of the word forensic, we were actually the university's debate team. So I was president of the college's debate team, but they used the word forensic as the Forensic Society. And I can't tell you how many times we had to clarify what we were saying, because they thought we were like involved in what you do. We're like, no, we're actually the debate team. But they used the word the forensic.
Yeah, somebody enshrined the a misguided term there, it seems.
Yeah. deducing our speeches or something.
Well,
like
that's
that. But
yeah, that's
it's very
true.
Very fascinating.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I do feel a little bit like Sherlock Holmes from time to time, one of my great heroes. For example, there's in the criminal courts, the application of forensic psychology, people think, oh, not guilty by reason of insanity, that's our meat and potatoes. No, it's not. The meat and potatoes of forensic psychology in the criminal courts is competency to stand trial. That question is asked a large percentage of the time relative to not guilty by reason of insanity, which is a defense of last choice. And the fundamental difference is the mental state at the time of the crime is in play with not guilty by reason of insanity. And that's where you have to be Sherlockian about it. You have to really be a detective, as opposed to competency to stand trial, which has to do with mental state at the time of trial.
Exactly, yes.
Right.
You know, I think as well our audience, everybody's going through a lot right now, and this pandemic and all of these new things that we're dealing with have brought in a lot of anxiety, depression, lack of clarity, lack of focus, grief. I mean, all of these different things that were a lot of loss, a lot of confusion, and anger and frustration. Tell us about how you're helping your clients deal with the realities of things like what we're going through now, and how you're helping to guide them through it, navigate through it, and find that clarity that they need.
Well, my orientation has always been that the person sitting in front of me is a snowflake, is unique. That person has a unique biology, a unique history. And so even though there is this – well, you don't come by that in a classroom, I'll tell you that. You've experience matters with a therapist. You know, you can't do this work out of a classroom or by supervision or textbooks. So anyway, so the person in front of me, I always consider a tabula rasa. You know, this is a blank slate that I need to call some hypotheses about what's going wrong. How is their life not working? Why is this person here? They can tell me so much, but then one needs to know how to listen. And so in the context of this plague, not to mention these other pressures, the political anger today and the divisiveness, the exigencies of climate change, this is a brave new world in a lot of challenging ways. So I see, you know, pressures on parents that are untenable. I see a great deal of anger. One of the things I see in common across patients is that it is this unpredicted change, and more importantly, I think, how unpredictable the future is, how in flux and outside your sphere of influence what's going to happen to you is. I deal with it on an individual basis, and my outlook is like this. My father's generation lived through World War II. They didn't know who would win or when would it end. No one in my grandfather's generation knew what to predict about the Depression or where it would deliver them. Our landmark crisis, I think, is what's going on now. My grandchildren's generation being termed Generation C for COVID. We don't know what their future is going to be like or how it's going to be influenced by this. So to answer your question more concisely, I'm sorry I'm rambling.
I love it.
I work with my patients You know, you mentioned that that idea between that idea of a gap between reality and expectations. Well, there's also a gap between reality and assumptions, reality and aspirations. And I work with each of my patients to narrow that gap. And one of the important ways to do that in this plague is to get them to, first of all, this is important, to distinguish between the things that they can influence, the things that they can control, distinguish that from the sphere of things they can't control, and to not squander their resources in their time, their energy, their money in the latter sphere. So once we can distinguish and tend to let go of spending time in the latter sphere, we then can concentrate on identifying what can we control, to what degree can we control it, and here's the essence of it, and here's when I let them out the door, because I don't get involved in long-term psychotherapy. I like to, you know, do brief stuff and get a person a little more emancipated than when they walked in, and if you need booster sessions, you come back. I get them to a point where they are able on their own to accept the shit that has hit the fan in their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's my orientation, is I guess acceptance, narrowing those gaps and acceptance, because as you mentioned, life is difficult. That's the default way for all living things in the world. Does that answer your question?
Right. It does, yeah, and it does beautifully.
Good.
You know what I love about your approach, and what I'm hearing you say in a beautiful way is it's not one size fits. There's certain methodologies, certain experience, certain things that you do, certain criteria, all of that. But
yes. It's
not a cookie-cutter approach. It's not one-size-fits-all. You treat an individual as an individual. And what I love is this approach you have to engage in that psychotherapeutic problem-solving through your sessions, and then when significant relief is achieved and one is in a more emancipated place, then you'll be able to anticipate and attenuate emerging problems for yourself, and if
that's
patterns
right.
interfere with your functioning or self-esteem, if they return, then booster sessions are a solution. So you allow them to take responsibility for their life, but you're there not holding their hand in the room with them 24/7, but giving them the tools and the resources to be able to, that they can call upon, that Dr. Klein instilled in them when Dr. Klein isn't in the room and something is going awry in their life. I love that approach.
I think that's really well said. At the risk of sounding immodest, I picture myself more as a shepherd. I mean, they're not doing
yes.
it by themselves. And one of the things I work hard on in sessions is it's not enough for them to come in once a week or whatever and get this dose of guidance. They need to export it out to where they operate, in school or on their job or in their homes or among their friends. They need to apply these changes. This is important. People come in to me because they need to change in some way. They need to change something. The pattern in their lives deliver them to a place that isn't working, whether it's socially, occupationally, or intra-psychically, anxiety, fears, angers, that sort of thing. So what they're doing isn't working. Therefore, they come to me, whether they state it or not, they need to change. There is no change without doing something. You have to do something differently that isn't working. That's where I come in. And it will initially feel very alien to you. Why? Because you hadn't been doing it before. But it quickly you find out if it works in ways at ameliorating the patterns or even changing the outcomes, that's naturalistically reinforcing. And anything that's reinforcing increases the likelihood that you do it again. If it doesn't work, it naturally extinguishes. So that's a process that I think goes across any treatment modality that you choose. And, oh, one other thing. You mentioned the word psychotherapy. I keep saying things that are important, but we only have a half an hour.
We'll have to have you come back. I'm hooked.
Okay. Psychologists, psychiatrists, licensed clinical social workers all need to be licensed to operate in any state in America. Psychotherapists, anyone. Your grandchildren, Jim, can call themselves psychotherapists tomorrow. It is not a licensed thing. And so they are not open. They're not psychiatrists, psychologists, licensed social workers have to go through extensive training and supervision and pass arduous, rigorous licensing examination and are subject to the ethics codes of their profession, violation of which brings serious sanctions. Psychotherapists, not so. There are great psychotherapists out there, but caveat emptor when you go see someone who calls themselves only a psychotherapist.
You know, you are very fond of quoting somebody that I and many, many people have revered who's no longer with us. And I had a nice chat before we went live about my many years affiliated with some PBS as well. You're very fond of quoting Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
I am indeed.
The passion of a good therapist when he says, whatever is human is mentionable, and whatever is mentionable is manageable. Tell us about that, Doctor.
Well, that really touched me the first. I don't remember, it was so long ago, how I came across it. I think it was in reading something. But I immediately typed it out, put it in a frame, and hung it in my office because I think that is consonant with everything about me that drew me into this field. I have always believed that whatever occurs in us, be it feeling or what we say or what we think or what we believe, is naturally occurring. And anything that is naturally occurring cannot be bad. It can be dealt with. It can get you in trouble. But it is human. And so it is not to be – there's no shame attached to it. There's no finger wagging about it. Whatever comes up for us is authentic, natural, and can be managed if it's not working. And I've believed that since childhood, I think. I had that intuition.
Yeah. I love the fact, too, that you distill down to one word capturing the essence of meaningful clinical work and another for successful forensic psychology practice, and those words are empathy and persuasion.
Yes.
Tell us about that, too.
You've done your homework, haven't you there, Jim?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, so I think singularly, the most important variable in a good therapeutic alliance, a good rapport, first and foremost, is you need to know how to really listen. I couldn't give you a course on how to do that. I can tell you over time you either learn it or you don't learn it, and you know it when you're doing it. It's an effort. And when you listen, my goal as a therapist is to wind up in the shoes of the person to whom I'm listening. I want to be able to experience what they're telling me about their lives so that I can bring my little more intact way of being in the world to repair theirs. I mean, it's how it generates the advice I give. And I'm not and empathy. This empathy, of course, is the word I'm talking about. Empathy in the clinical sphere cannot be feigned. You can't fake empathy. There's no human being alive that's going to fall for false empathy. And empathy is not the same thing as sympathy. Sympathy, you feel for someone. Empathy, you feel with someone. And that can be a draining but very satisfying two-way street. And it delivers you to this place, again, that I glean from Fred Rogers. He was nothing if not a person of compassion. And compassion comes from the Latin meaning with suffering. You suffer with somebody, and you are their guide because you're a little more intact and a little more schooled and a little more experienced at doing that than they are. And that's how you do effective work. In the forensic sphere, singularly, the most important salient talent you can have is to be persuasive. Going to court is theater. Going to court isn't about jurisprudence so much as it is you're entering at least a psychologist. We're dealing on their field by their rules, using their language, and we're at a disadvantage. My orientation when I go into court is, I'm just a poor country psychologist. Your Honor, why is this guy yelling at me? You know, cross-examination can be hellish. I love it. I mean, I love the fencing because the lawyers who know they have the advantage tend to underestimate good expert witnesses. So it's about presenting to the trier of fact, which is the judge or the jury, strength under cross-examination. You need to persuade that your opinion trumps the opinion on the other side. Don't forget, this is warfare. It's adversarial. It's not like science where there's only one truth. You can have multiple truths on multiple days given the same facts of the case, depending on what side is more persuasive to that particular trier of fact. And so persuasion is the whole ball of wax in the forensic sphere.
Absolutely. I want to let folks know, we've got a minute or so left, that you do, in addition to the forensic psychology services we've chatted about as well, family therapy, couples counseling, individualized therapy as well. So the complete gamut for folks, whatever their needs are, and if they want to make contact and they want to avail themselves of the opportunity of your expertise, they can go to www.normanklein, and that's KLEINPhD.com. Norman, NORMAN, Klein, KLEINPhD.com. He's extraordinary. You can tell he's a high-level empath and very compassionate and very dedicated to what he does. And a pleasure speaking with you. I've got 4 million other questions because I love this topic, but hopefully, Doctor, maybe we'll have you back and explore some more. This was truly an honor and a pleasure, and I commend you for all the work that you do because you're impacting lives. And I know as much as it is a career, this is work that really reflects the essence of who you are. It's work that you thoroughly love and enjoy, which, again, is something that I think your clients appreciate about you. They can tell that you're all in with them and really guiding them to contentment and hopefully solace and peace in their life. So thank you for that, and thank you for spending time with me here on Close Up Radio, and I hope we explore some more down the line. That would be a pleasure.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Jim, and it just turned out that it was a good, lucky match between who I am and what I do. Who knows what comes first, chicken or egg, but it's been a satisfying career so far.
Well, a pleasure to have you here, Doctor, and again, thank you for joining us on the show, and I encourage folks, again, NormanKleinPhD.com is the website. Make kind of contact. Again, one of the greatest you can do in life is to invest in yourself. Jim Masters here, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, stay tuned. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another great guest right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, have a great day, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.